Hey everybody, welcome to a great episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Today we have Joshua Graham Lynn from an organization called Represent Us. They're online at represent.us. Great organization. These guys work with all sides of the political spectrum, from the right to the left to the center, to fix the broken election systems. So you're going to want to listen to this episode. Joshua today is here to tell us, first of all, about what we can all do to help fix that broken election system. Secondly, he's here today to tell us that we need to pass the For the People Act. That's one of the most important things needs to happen right here, right now, today. And lastly, he's going to tell us, if you really want to make a difference, become a billionaire. That and more right now on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani, hey, Jobrani Maz, oh, Maz Jobrani,
hey, Jobrani,
Mazzy Mazzy, oh, Maz 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 Maz,
hey,
I got a podcast, oh,
Back to School, yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome, excited to have you. I'm your host, Maz Jobrani. That's my co-host, Tehran. What's up, T?
Yes, yes, it's Labor Day Monday. Why are we working?
Why are we working? Because we work hard to deliver episodes every Tuesday, people. Every Tuesday an episode drops. I want you to listen. I want you to watch. And I want you to share. Tell your friends. These guys worked Labor Day. They did labor on Labor Day to bring us an episode. We must listen. Comprende? All right. Maybe we should have a translator in Spanish so we can hit our Spanish audience, Tehran. Just think
that
about
demographic.
It.
Let's put, yeah, of course. Let's think about time. That.
Tehran and I, we were in Vegas this past weekend. We did shows in Vegas. Tehran, was Vegas fun for you?
Vegas was too much fun, boss. Too much. I haven't slept. I'm wired. I have to wear a bathrobe. I've lost so much that I have to wear a bathrobe now.
Tehran is young, so he is out and about in Vegas. He knows people. He's doing things. I went to one place where there was a lot of people at some pool, outdoor pool thing. I lasted 3 minutes. I sprinted out of there. I go, I cannot hang out around these crazy people who don't realize there's a pandemic going on. And the only thing I had to look forward to was today's episode, because I get to talk to somebody, Josh Graham Lynn, who is with Represent Us, who is trying to make us more educated and more involved in politics, all right? In fixing the broken system. Tehran, have you volunteered with any organization over the past several years where you feel like you've made a positive difference?
I volunteer a lot. So I volunteer with unhoused organizations that help unhoused people or homeless people without being restrictive. I work with democracy representatives that represent democracy as a whole, not one political party or the other. I work with a lot of organizations because I actually think we can all be the change.
I agree with you. And I think we come from a culture, a lot of times immigrants, when they come to America, they want to lay low. I know my parents were always saying, we don't get involved in politics, lay low. Don't tell anybody you're here. Just keep your head straight and move forward. But I think the more we live in this country, the more we realize, oh, we can make a change. And last elections, I volunteered with vote riders to help people from either side, whoever wanted to help them get the right documentation to be able to vote. I went and I was a poll watcher in Nevada during the elections. And now Represent Us has given me hope to do something, because I know the For the People Act right now, we keep hearing this name, For the People Act, For the People Act. What is that? Well, it's something that guarantees a lot of voting rights to people, again, from all over the place, right, left, rich, poor, doesn't matter. We need to defend democracy by helping pass the For the People Act. And you guys are going to listen to this episode. Joshua Graham Lynn, very well spoken, very eloquent. You're going to come out knowledgeable. But also, if there's one thing you can take away from this, I want you to pick up the phone or go to Twitter and figure out how to contact your senator, no matter what state you're in, and say, pass the For the People Act. You're gonna do that, and you're also gonna tell a relative to do the same thing. We're gonna push our members of Congress to pass the For the People Act. Unless you're a billionaire and the system's working for you, then don't worry about it. You don't need to even listen to this episode.
Yeah, actually, to be very fair, Maz, a lot of the organizations that I volunteer for is because you make me. So I just wanted to make that clear. You sign us up for a lot of things. You sign me up for things I didn't even know I was supposed to care about.
Yeah, I got Tehran doing community service. He hasn't committed the crime, but I got you doing community service regardless. With that said, we're gonna stop babbling and we're gonna get into the episode. Tehran and I are on tour, so if you're any of the cities, which are Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis, Atlantic City, Newark, New Jersey, Boston, Denver, DC next year, San Francisco, we're coming to you. So go to MazJobrani.com.
We're even going to Burbank. We're going to Burbank. No one goes to Burbank. We're going to Burbank.
Exactly. We'll be in Burbank. Go to MazJobrani.com or follow Tehran at I Am Tehran. Follow me at MazJobrani. And I want you to also listen to and follow and donate and volunteer and be a part of represent.us. Represent us. I'm excited. You're going to enjoy this episode. You're going to learn a lot. Let's go talk to Joshua Graham Lynn from Represent Us on Back to School with MazJobrani.
Back to school. Yeah.
Joshua Graham Lynn, thank you for joining us on Back to School with MazJobrani. How are you doing today?
I'm great, and it's super my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I got to tell you, man, when I get a bald, handsome dude like you on my show, I get excited. So thank you for being part of this.
But bald, you know, guys, he's important. You know he's important, Maz. He has three names, Joshua Graham Lynn. So either he's very important or he is going to be a serial killer. Like, that is how that works.
If I may say, there are two Joshes here, and everybody gets Josh Lynn wrong. They think it's one name. So I had to put the Graham in the middle, and that's how I became Joshua Graham Lynn. But I appreciate the vote of confidence.
Were you and the other Josh both co-founders?
Yeah, and we were friends beforehand.
Holy moly. Okay, this gets very confusing. So, okay, before we go any further, let's just start with Dara's question. My son Dara, 13 years old. I showed him Represent Us. He had a question for you. So let's go out the gate. Hold on, Dara, stop. I always do this. Hold on. Here we go.
This technology.
Technology. Here we go. Ready, set, and go. Here we go.
Hi, Mr. Lynn. I have a question for you. How does ranked choice voting improve elections?
That is a great question. I love it. So I think in order to explain how ranked choice voting helps elections, let's just talk about how they're broken, right?
What is ranked choice voting?
Oh, simply put, ranked choice voting means instead of voting for one candidate where you just say, this is the one I want, now you get to put your candidates in order of preference. And if the candidate you chose comes in last, then your second choice vote gets counted and so on and so on. And the idea behind this is that it counts the majority winner. So like whoever got the most majority votes wins. You don't get somebody winning with 14% of the vote. Kind of actually like Trump did in the primary in 2016. But here's what I think is important about ranked choice voting is in our current electoral system, the incentives are built such that we are actually creating the extremism and the division and the separation that we're experiencing in our daily lives. That's actually incentivized by the election system. Because right now in our primaries, you've got a Republican primary and you've got a Democratic primary. And all of the voters who vote in either side tend to be the more diehard or extreme voters for that side. It's about 14% of voters total. And what happens is, because it's just the more extreme voters on those sides, the candidates pull towards those sides. It becomes a vicious cycle. And what you end up having is, let's say you have five candidates running. Somebody would only have to get a little more than 20% of the vote in order to have the most votes. With ranked choice voting, you put all of the candidates together in one primary. So now you've got Democrats and Republicans, and you have everybody vote in one primary, and you rank the candidates. And what it does is encourages candidates to lean more towards the center, to be more civil, to be looking to get your second choice vote, not just your first choice vote. So there's less me saying Maz is a crazy person and you shouldn't vote for him because he's terrible, because maybe you like him best as your second vote, and I want to get that second vote. And so it incentivizes voters to come to the middle, and incentivizes candidates to be a lot less extreme in the way that they run for office. And then the outcome of that is that we actually put people through to the general election who are more moderate, which can be really good for the country right now, as I'm sure you can imagine.
So you guys, so correct me if I'm wrong, you guys were also involved in trying to get the New York City mayoral campaign to use ranked choice voting, and they did. And what were some of the, because I remember when the results were coming in, people were saying, oh, we got to wait, it's a little confusing. What are the downsides of ranked choice voting?
The only time that there's a downside to ranked choice voting is when there is an electorate that is really leaning one way or the other naturally. So San Francisco is a good example of a place where it doesn't work as well as it could. The voters of San Francisco feel like, eh, you know, it's fine, but it's not great. And it's because it's mostly progressives voting more progressive. And so that kind of moderating effect doesn't take place. But if you take a place like Alaska, for instance, where ranked choice voting is now in place, what's incredible about it is you no longer have the threat on Senator Murkowski that she's going to get primaried by a more radical conservative to kick her out of office. Instead, she can operate with a cleaner conscience as a senator, knowing that there's going to be a ranked choice vote and that she can actually just express what she believes. It takes away that power of the one party to sort of hold a lock on their electorate for that election.
So just to be clear, so what would happen is, let's say Senator Murkowski's situation, the extreme people on the extreme right would go and vote for their extreme candidate as their first choice. And then they'd be going down the list and they'd be like, well, okay, Murkowski, I'll put her down as third, let's say, or something.
Yeah.
And eventually the people that are in the moderate section of the Republicans would say, well, I want her as my first choice. So all of a sudden she would start moving up. But then she's got the third ranking. So in a way, like you said, because we all agree, I think if you were to give somebody a choice, and especially if you still say, look, this is your, you pick your best, and then know that even your worst is better than the person you're going to hate on the other side regardless, right? Meaning when they go to the general election, because you can't use ranked choice voting in general elections, can you?
No, but I think about it this way. If you're sick and tired of voting for the lesser of two evils, which we all are, right? We all talk about it every time. It's like, I hate that person over there so much, but they're not as bad as this person. So I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils. Ranked choice voting fixes that because somebody has to get more than 50% of the vote to win. And I think that's what's so important for voters to know about why ranked choice voting is gaining so much momentum right now.
Got it. And how do we inspire people to vote? Because this past election had, I believe, the general election had the biggest voter turnout, I think, in our recent history. How do we keep people interested and inspired to vote?
I mean, I think that with voting, you've got a lot of people saying it's important to vote, right? We've got celebrities saying it's important to vote. You've got politicians saying it's important to vote. You've got people like you and me. You know, we all think it's really important to vote. But it's kind of like if you think about let's say a Gen Z or millennial, you gotta go vote. The only thing they've ever seen is a corrupt and broken system. And so it's the same thing as saying, you should buy a ticket for the Titanic. It's gonna be awesome. And they're like, the only thing I've ever seen is that ship sinks. So tell me why I should get in on this. So I think in order to raise voter participation, to get people to actually believe that it's worth voting, we need to fix the system in which people are participating. And we do that through laws like ranked choice voting and others.
And what about all this stuff we're hearing now with the Voting Rights Act and all these legislatures that are starting to limit voting? And are you guys on the ground, is Represent Us trying to fight that? And how are you fighting it? Is it state by state? Are you trying to get Joe Manchin to, you know, get rid of the filibuster? And I mean, what's your strategy to make voting more democratic?
Yeah, so first of all, I think it's really important for people to know that the two laws that need to pass right now, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and what was formerly called the For the People Act, are two of the most important pieces of legislation that we will see in our lifetimes. They're without a doubt the most important in a generation. And they're important for two reasons. Number one, the Voting Rights Advancement Act puts back into place protections that were stripped by the Supreme Court that make it too easy to suppress the vote against minorities. The For the People Act does things like get rid of gerrymandering, which we all hate. Give people a chance to register to vote up to a couple of weeks before the election. Give people the chance to register that day with a provisional ballot if they need to. It makes voting accessible and participatory while keeping really strict anti-fraud measures in place. And when I say that, I have to say, voting fraud doesn't really exist in this country. But even so, we want to have protections, right? And so All of that is happening in the For the People Act. And if we don't pass it, what we're going to see is a country that starts moving further and further away from being a democracy where people's voices are heard. And so I think the most important thing that people can do is get active and call their senator, first of all. It feels like you're shouting into a well, but you're not. It's like, if we're not going to be active and noisy about saving our democracy so that we can have our next vote or that we can win on the next issue we really care about, and like, what are we doing here in America? That's the thing we need to protect. And then as far as represent us's role in it, we play a very unique role in that we're one of the very few organizations in this country that is really dedicated to being right left in everything we do. And so it's not about Democrats, it's not about Republicans, it's about bringing people together from multiple ideologies to say, you know what, we just want a democracy. We want our voices to matter. We want to be heard. And then let the cards fall how they may on all the other issues. But first and foremost, let's have a functioning government and a functioning democracy. And right now, as you mentioned, we've got folks like Manchin who are kind of wringing their hands and saying, I don't know. A lot of people don't know this. Manchin co-sponsored the For the People Act a few years ago. So there's a lot of politics happening. And so what we want to see happen at Represent Us is we want to see those moderates, those rational conservatives who really, really believe in democracy and are disgusted by what they're seeing, we want them to come forward and speak to folks like Manchin, who's from West Virginia, right? Like, Manchin's moderate. He's a moderate kind of conservative guy. That's okay. That's good. He's a leader. Let's have his constituency talking to him and saying how important this is. And so I don't know what your audience is, but for folks that are not decidedly one side or the other, these are the people whose voices really need to raise up, because there's just too much extremism. And I think the whole country is hurting for it, but I think also politicians in power are really getting pulled to the sides, and it would be really good to see the voices in the middle speak up for things like democracy.
But what about this thing that we all hear, the thing that we say, just demographically, the country seems to be going more and more democratic. If you were, you know, the party-wise, there's more Democrats than there are Republicans, just numbers.
Sure.
And so if I'm a Republican and I say, well, why would I want to then make it a even playing field? Because as Trump famously said, he goes, if you let these people keep voting with mail-in ballots, Republicans will never win again. So how are you convincing Republicans to get on board with getting rid of gerrymandering and making voting more democratic for everybody?
It's a great question. I think one of the things I've seen through the work that I do, I've listened to some of your other episodes, and I know you have conservative friends as well. You often reference like the conservatives I know, the conservatives I hang out with. Same thing for me. And what I found is that there's a big difference between the big R GOP Republican establishment and a voter who has voted Republican for much of their life. In the same way that there's a big difference between a big D Democrat and somebody who's progressive in their values. And so what I'm talking about is voters who are willing to put country over party because they recognize that this is an existential threat to the American experiment. If we don't protect our democracy, it will be gone. And I think look at all of the groups that have risen up, look at all of the conservatives that have come forward to say, you know, I'm a Republican voter, but what I've been seeing over the last 4 years attacking our democracy is not okay. That doesn't make it an anti-Republican issue. That doesn't make me anti-Republican. It just means that there are some voters who do not identify with what that party, the party establishment, has been doing, and they would rather see a functioning country. So that's what I'm asking for. That's what we're asking for.
So when we look at voting in this country, are we saying that the Electoral College, for example, is part of the problem?
I think it depends on what you're counting, but absolutely, right? The Electoral College is clearly not giving us the results that we would like to see. And there are some really smart strategies out there right now to not necessarily abolish the Electoral College, but to work with it, to keep it intact for tradition's sake, but to make the popular vote the more important thing. And just for people who are listening and don't know how it works, right? Like, you get to go vote in your state, but then there are electors from your state who ultimately cast their vote to decide who's president. And in some states, those electors are bound to the vote count of your state. In some states, they're not even bound to that. But almost none of them are bound to the popular vote across the entire country. And so the question is, you know, does it make sense for the United States of America to be electing a president that doesn't reflect who most Americans want to be president? And I mean, I think that we should be using the popular vote. I think we should be counting everybody across America. There are folks in less populous states who would say, well, that puts us at a disadvantage. That's actually not a really fair way to look at it, because the people with less people in their state, actually their vote is counting way, way more than people who live in cities right now, right? Because if you live in a populous state and your vote counts the same as somebody who, if the electors count the same as somebody from a state that has a lot less people, now your vote is worth a ton more. And so that's not fair either. So we need to come up with a different system. And the right system is to have the election for president represent who most Americans want to see as president. And there's lots of good ways to do that. You can check out nationalpopularvote.org. It's another organization that we partner with, who's been doing phenomenal work on what they call an interstate compact. It's a whole bunch of states saying, yeah, we'll use the national vote count because it's better.
So ultimately, we go to the ballots and you'd say, okay, so-and-so got 50 million, so-and-so got 51 million, the 51 million wins.
Yeah, as opposed to saying, well, in this state, they got that many electors, and in that state, they got that many electors, and somebody's doing some behind-the-scenes thing to pressure the electors, and do they follow the vote? Like, no, just, yeah, if you got more votes, you got the majority of votes, then you should win.
You know, Tehran and I had someone from the Vote Riders. I don't know if you know the Vote Riders. They're another nonprofit. Their whole thing was, they said, we're nonpartisan. We just want to help people in every state know what they need or help them get what they need in order to be able to vote. So I volunteered, and I would get online and I would get texts sent to me from all these different states. And then I would have to go research it to give the answers. So there was questions such as, one person would say, hey, I live in Cleveland, Ohio, but I'm going to college in Akron, Ohio. Do I need to go back to Cleveland to vote, or can I vote in Akron? And then I would research it and I would say, yes, based on these laws, you got to do this, that, the other. But it was crazy to me because we live in California, where we get our ballots mailed to us. We're all registered. We're ready to go. And and it's easy to vote in California. It's pretty easy. And it was crazy, some of the things that I was getting, some of the questions. One person wrote me an email saying, hey, I need to get, I need to register to vote, and I need to take my, some form to present when I go to vote. And it was, I forget what the state was. Let's say it was Tennessee. And I said, oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, just take the form. And they go, well, where do I get a printer? I swear. And I go, oh, my gosh, there's people who don't have printers at home, or they don't have access. So you realize this whole thing of, because to me, when I heard people saying, oh, there's voter fraud, sure, it's possible that there's some voter fraud. But I already knew from firsthand experience how many hoops some people have to jump through just to be able to vote, and how not everybody is set up in a conducive way to vote. I mean, the fact that there was one ballot box in Harris County that covers, I don't know how many millions of people in Texas, it's just mind-boggling. So
it is.
How do you fight that? I mean, how do you go to a place like Texas and go, Governor Abbott wants one ballot? Because now, again, I know we're trying to be, equal to both sides, but the Republican Party in Texas is saying, well, we just need one ballot box. And if you want to do mail-in ballot, even before this election, mail-in ballot in Texas, you had to be, in the military or a certain age. Not everybody could mail in their ballots like we do here in California. So how do you have a discussion with somebody who is trying to limit voting like that to such a ridiculous point and get them to come to your side to see what you're saying?
Well, I think, first of all, it's really important to say this is not a both sides issue right now, right? Like, one party is clearly taking actions to make it more difficult for certain people to vote, and the other party is working to expand access and protect the integrity of the elections at the same time. And so, just to put that to bed, I don't want to do the both sidesism thing, because it's not valid in this moment. That doesn't mean, people don't feel different ways about different issues, or they don't attach to their party. You mentioned the voter fraud thing and whether or not it's real. And then we talked about Texas. And I think it's worth everybody knowing that Texas had their attorney general spend, I think, $24 million. I don't remember what the total amount of money was, but an ungodly amount of money to research voter fraud in Texas. They looked at 17 million ballots and they found 16 cases of fraud. So less than one in a million. Right. So when we say that voter fraud is not a problem in this country, like, it's not me, Mr. Nonprofit guy, saying, oh, it's not a problem. It's like, no, it's a one in a million thing. It was the most comprehensive study ever done. They were trying to make the case there was a fraud problem, and that's what they came up with. And so, you know, I want elections to be as secure as anybody else does. But when we hear things like the barriers you're talking about, right? Like, I got to print out this thing. I mean, I work all day. My wife works all day. Sometimes we work on the weekends. How am I going to get time off to just go vote? And is that what democracy is supposed to be like? Is that what America is supposed to be like? Or should we be making it easy, like you just mentioned in California? What about places like Colorado, where they have full mail-in voting? It's just how everybody votes now. You get a ballot, it has a barcode, there's signature matching that happens by a computer. If that doesn't hold up, it goes in front of a judge. It's actually not just one judge, it's a panel of judges from both sides. They watch to make sure signatures are matched carefully. It costs something like 40% less to administer for the state and is way more secure and increases voter participation and access. And so I think the way you make the case of like, yeah, Governor Abbott is doing some terrible things right now around voting. It's like unabashedly partisan and it's unabashedly party over country. The whole idea is to lock down the state so only one group of voters votes and so only one party wins. But if we can have a conversation about what works better for voters and get people excited about it and get people demanding it and show people, did you know if you lived in Colorado, you wouldn't have to do this ridiculous thing they have to do in Tennessee or Texas? Did you know that in Colorado, you get 2 weeks at home with your ballot, meaning you can go on the internet and research a candidate? Like, that's awesome, right? You can look at that crazy ballot initiative language on the back and you can read it four times. And you can text your friend and say, hey, do you understand this? And they're like, oh yeah, it's that thing about the grocery bags, right? Like whatever it is. Like that's how we all want our voting to work. We want people to be educated and have time and make smart choices. So I feel like it's just about getting the message out there because the message speaks for itself. This isn't some like crazy issue that we're all divided on, is it? Like we all agree. You guys are both nodding your head.
So where do they do it right? Clearly the United States is doing it wrong. Where do they actually do this right?
Well,
and don't say Sweden.
Don't say Sweden.
Yeah, it's always Sweden.
Always Sweden.
It's always Sweden, but at the same time, Sweden has less than 10 million people. So Sweden has less people in its entire country than Los Angeles has in Los Angeles. So whenever people say Sweden, I'm like, of course it's easy to do things in Sweden. You have a pretty much homogenous group of people who, even when they don't think the same, they kind of think the same. They have a very similar background and ideology on how to do things. And it's very easy to streamline things in this nature when you're not breaking it up into 50 states across 5,000 miles, not even including Alaska and Hawaii type things, you know? So where are they doing it right other than Sweden?
I love it. And you know, you're absolutely right with the homogeny of Sweden. It's just a very different thing. And I'll be the first to say, I have yet, either myself or talking to any other expert, had anybody say, you know, we should copy so-and-so exactly. But I think the question is actually, how bad is it here right now, really? And are there other places in the world that are doing it better that we could learn from? Or is there something that they're doing better? And so here are a couple of examples of things that could happen better. One of them, Colorado and five or six other states across the country, including just this year, Vermont, put it into place, the vote by mail system we just talked about. Fantastic for all the reasons I just said. In countries all over the world, including, I believe, Ireland and places in England, they're using ranked choice voting, or Australia, sorry. They're using ranked choice voting. We can learn from that. We can bring it here. We could have multi-member districts. And just so that everybody understands what that is, it would mean that in one state, rather than taking your state and cutting it up into, say, four voting districts where everybody has to vote in their district, and then you can draw different shapes of districts and you can make one look like Daffy Duck so you can gerrymander it to make sure you win. Instead of that, you just make bigger districts with more members inside each district so it can't be gerrymandered, because now you're just voting for multiple, you know, it's like the winners win and the losers lose, and the winners go and represent the people and the losers don't. And that's just much more fair. And that happens again all over the country, and countries around the world, they're using that system, and we could adopt it here very easily. It's just about having the political will, writing the legislation, and getting it passed.
So historically speaking, give me some good news here, Josh. Have we been making progress compared to where we were? Have we been making progress, and are we at the point right now, here's where the bad news might come in, where we're about to go back to 1950, pre, civil rights? I mean, are we going backwards? Like, what do you see going on here?
I thought this was supposed to be a comedy show.
So funny. So far, so funny.
Democracy.
You know, it's not good in the moment. It's just not, right? What we're seeing is, I hate to use the word unprecedented because it's getting used an unprecedented amount of times all the time these days. But it's like what we're seeing is really bad in states and amongst the parties and with the former president. It's not good. But there are sparks of hope. And, you know, I'm not going to say I know exactly how this is going to turn out, but I will give you the good news because that's what you asked for. Yes. With the caveat that it's, you know, it's the light at the end of the tunnel, maybe. So in 2018, more pro-democracy laws passed in the United States than ever in American history, ever. It was like 23 laws passed in states across the country. That had never happened before. There are millions of Americans working to make this happen, which is promising. There are places like Vermont just this year that I mentioned a minute ago, who passed full mail-in ballots for all of their people. That was signed into law by a Republican governor. I mentioned Alaska before, passing similar expanses of voting, ranked choice voting, open primaries, et cetera. So there are these really strong, bright points. And then there are the dark points that we hear about all the time. And currently, the dark points are outnumbering and outweighing the bright ones. And I think the only way that's going to change is if we have quite literally millions of Americans speaking up. But something like 50% of Americans are now not associated with either political party. Like they've left the parties. They're registered as an independent now. And the reason for that is that the parties are no longer representing the people. And so if all of those people that are leaving the parties can actually speak up and say, we don't like this way this is working, there are things that we can do as a people. I think we often forget, and it's sad that we forget this, but the government is just, it's just us. Like it's you and me and it's us. We put those people in power. We pay them with our taxes. They make laws that we ultimately approve or we're supposed to vote them out of office, right? Like we still have a democracy. It's a republic, but it is a functioning democracy. And that puts the blame, you know, back on us, or the onus back on us to do something about it. And it's hard because we live in this massive, diverse country where we get, you know, really divided on other really, really important issues that we deserve to be divided on. But ultimately, if we don't protect this, it's going to be gone.
So if someone's listening to this and they're going, oh my God, the end of the world is coming, what can they do to be active and help be part of that multi-million person movement?
I can answer that. Buy guns, right, Josh?
Yeah.
That's it.
Definitely. Toilet paper and guns. Toilet paper and guns.
God.
Buy those two, you're done. You're American.
America!
So what can people do? There's, I would say, just two things right now that I would ask people to do. Three. I'll go with three. Number one, I'm here with Represent Us. We're a nonprofit. Make a donation to us or look up any other pro-democracy organization and make a donation to them, because the amount of money that goes into saving democracy versus so many other issues in this country is about 100-fold less than other issues that we care about, like the environment, et cetera. So there just needs to be more investment in the philanthropic space around democracy. Number two is volunteer and work with any of these organizations. Maz, you said you were working with a group that helps educate voters. Absolutely. That's awesome. Like in your little way, you helped someone with your time. If everybody did that, we all put in a little bit, we can win. One of my favorite things to say is if everybody does nothing, you can be absolutely sure that nothing's going to change. But if each of us just does a little bit, then we've got a shot. So it doesn't require you to do the whole thing yourself. You just got to get involved. And again, I'll speak up. We're Represent Us. Go to represent.us. And there are lots of other organizations around this country. Some of them are partisan, if that's where you want to be. Some of them are nonpartisan, if that's where you want to be. But ultimately, it's about getting involved and speaking up for your country. And I said I had three things. So the third thing is, right now, the fight for the poor, the fight for the People Act is absolutely existential. We have to fix gerrymandering right now, or it's going to be in place for another 10 years. We have to protect ballot access. And if we don't protect those things, they will be gone. And once they're gone, they're really, really hard to get them back. And passing the For the People Act can help that happen. So please call your senator and tell them you want to see that happen, regardless of where you live. It has to happen all over the country.
Where are we at currently with that for the People Act? Is it that that we need to stop the filibuster in order to pass it? Or are there any Republicans on board to pass the For the People Act? Or do we know?
Right now, we're waiting to find out if there's going to be Republicans signing on to the new version of the For the People Act. It went through some changes over the last few weeks, which are fine. Some things got cut out, some things got put in. But ultimately, the stuff that got left in it is historic, to say the least. It's a transformative bill for democracy. So anybody that thinks that it got watered down or whatever, like, you know, it's not everything everybody wanted, but it's still an absolutely incredible, powerful bill.
I think they got the For the People Act, and then they came back. They said, we want to call it For Some People Act. And it's only white people that meets For the Some People Act.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think the Republicans are into that.
That's terrible. Yeah, that's not that's not the way we want that to be coming across.
No.
So, look. One of the things that hopefully will remain in the For the People Act, just to give you a tiny slice, it might make it so that Election Day is a national holiday. Now, I don't know if that's going to end up in the final bill, but let's just, if it is, that's huge, just all by itself. If you're also fixing gerrymandering and making it illegal, and if you're also, you know, giving people early access and all these other, like, that's a very powerful bill. So you asked about the filibuster. It's the elephant in the room. We got to talk about it.
Yeah.
What I think is going to happen is there's going to be some adjustment to the filibuster or fix to the filibuster or some change to it that makes it possible to pass things like voting reform that are crucial for the country, that are pro-democracy, that most Americans should be able to look at and go, you know what? I get it. That has to get passed. Washington's broken. This is going to help fix it. And I think we all think of the filibuster like Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Right? Like filibuster. I know what that is. You get to stand up in front of a room and you speak and you sweat and it's intense. Like, no, it's literally you send a text to somebody saying, we're not going to do that. And that's considered a filibuster now. And so we could put some of those rules back in place that make it so if you really want to block something, you got to stand there and, like, good on you.
And some of those guys are pretty old, so we know they would probably die filibustering. So
that's right. Hey, you know.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Mitch McConnell would be. 24 hours later, be like, well, he died. Listen, man, here's what's encouraging is you're saying there's something to do. The For the People Act is very important. And I was trying to explain it to somebody the other day about how, as you know, every state, all these different states are trying to get rid of access to voting. But if you put this act in, that's a federal state, it goes, you have to have the lowest level of rules have to be this. And so you have to have everything above that. It's got to be more rights to people. Am I correct in terms of making it easier to vote?
That's absolutely correct. And bottom line, it's about protecting your right to vote. That's what it's about. And if you don't value your right to vote, then by all means, don't call your senator. But if you do value your right to vote and your neighbors and your communities and your neighborhood, then you got to get these things in place because you're absolutely right. There's something like, I don't remember what the last count was, 397, 405 anti-voting rights bills moving across the country. And it's just the kind of stuff you mentioned before. It sounds so innocuous. Oh, there's not as many ballot drop boxes or voting hours aren't open quite as much. But if you're a parent with kids and you're running them to school and you're packing lunches and you're working your full-time job and then another job and your partner's off at work, like, it's sometimes hard to find some time to vote. And so minimizing hours actually really, really hurts certain communities. And it sounds so innocuous, but it's so insidious.
I have a question because, Taryn, I'm sorry, I'm monopolizing, but I'm wondering, who are these malicious people who are they sitting in a room going like, whoa, we're going to get rid of people's rights to vote? I mean, who are these people? Because I've heard the Abbotts and some of these other people frame it as no, we're just trying to make the elections more secure. That's what we're trying to make it so that people, it's not against people of color, it's not against people that are poor, we're just trying to make it more secure. Are these people, because it kind of goes to another thing I think that you guys work on, is the money that goes into elections and the lobbying and all the dirty money. Is there a lot of dirty money behind this stuff? And they're just trying to maintain their powers? I mean, who's behind this stuff?
Of course they're trying to maintain their power. That's exactly what's going on. And for me, the proof point is, you know, yes, they're saying they're trying to make the election more secure. But I'm telling you, they did the biggest study ever and they found that voter fraud is a one in a million thing. So like, is that the problem? Is that really the problem? Or are you completely full of it? And what you're actually trying to do is stop people of color, people from poor communities from voting to tip the elections. And, you know, you only have to scratch down a few layers and do your research to find out that the arguments don't hold up. And when the arguments don't hold up, then you ask, why are they doing this? And I think you just gave some really phenomenal suggestions. It's about the money in politics, as most Americans know. It's about holding on to power. And it's about doing the bidding of the people that make their election possible. And what I mean by that, there's this phenomenal study from 2014. It looked at something like 1,800 public opinion polls over a 20-year period. It was done by Princeton University. And they found unequivocally that there is zero statistical significance of what voters want to what elected officials do. But when you look at the slice of organizations that have lobbying arms, special interests, the folks, the multinational corporations that are putting the money into those special interests, the alignment between what they want to see happen and what the legislators actually do is not perfect, but it's a whole lot more than zero. It's something like 30%. It's outrageous. So
the politicians are doing what the Koch brothers and Halliburton and all these other companies, the Boeings, all these people want to them to do.
Yeah. And if they don't, then they don't get the money and then they can't run for office and then they lose. So, you know, you can say it's the evil politicians, and in some cases, maybe it is, but it is really about a systemic issue. The system that we have allowed to come into place is broken, and it incentivizes bad behavior. It's the same thing with the ranked choice voting we talked about, the voter rights stuff that we're talking about, and it's the same thing with corruption and money in politics. It's all about the system allows it to be this way and creates a vicious cycle where they are incentivized to be more extreme, do the bidding of the multinationals, do the bidding of special interests, and they're incentivized not to represent the people, which is why we're stuck where we are.
Tehran, are you going to call your senator after this episode?
Definitely not. Here's my question, right? And I want to know, because this has come up a couple times, but so are the restrictive voting laws that exist honestly unbiased, really there to just oppress the minority vote? Is that really the biggest reason they still exist?
I mean, I'm not a mind reader, so I can't tell if maybe the people pushing these laws believe something else, but the effect of those laws is to do exactly what you just said. It is to, in certain locations, suppress a minority vote. In other locations, to sort of rig a district so that it's, you know, all of the people on one party are stuck into this one district, and then the other five districts go to the other party. And in that case, you know, you take a whole state, maybe the vote count is 49 to 51, but one party has 6 out of 7 or 5 out of 6 representatives in Congress. So yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. They're protecting power. And, you know, I don't know what the motivation is. I don't know if the motivation is racist or if it's about people of color. I don't know what the thing is, but I do know that the common thread is about protecting power, and it's about protecting majority, whether or not that's what the voters want.
You know, Mitt Romney, during the first impeachment, when he was one of the ones that was speaking up against Trump, he was speaking somewhere and they interviewed him, and he said, and somebody asked, they go, you know, Senator Romney, why don't you think there's more Republicans taking your side and criticizing what the president has done? And Mitt Romney goes, well, it's pretty basic. He goes, one party has power, the other party wants that power. So the party in power at that point, the Republicans, he goes, they don't want to give up the power. So they're not going to criticize their own guy. He was talking about his own party. He says, they're not going to criticize their own guy. So it really ultimately falls into that, because ultimately what you said, you can try and paint it in any way you want, where you go, no, we're trying to make it more safe. And yeah, of course you show an ID to get into a club or into a bar. You should show an ID to vote. And I'm sitting here as somebody who was on the, you know, volunteering with somebody like Vote Riders, realizing there are a lot of people who don't have the kind of driver's license or whatever it is, because maybe they're poor, maybe they're taking the bus, maybe they're older, maybe it's harder for them to vote. So these hoops that are making people jump through them, I think, Tehran, and I don't know the answer, but I think that it does affect the people that are either minorities or they're poor and not the ones that are as well off and have access to everything. And they go, you know, like Josh was saying, if I'm living my life and I'm doing well, I don't need a day off to go vote, because I could just take that time and go do it and then go get a little coffee and then go back to work. Whereas there's people who literally have to work six, seven days a week and they go, I don't have time to go vote. So a day off would be a great thing. So anyway, I just answered my answer, but that's just me. Josh, quick question for you as before we get into the speed round. What got you into this? What were you doing before? And then you go, I'm going to go start represent us with the other Josh.
Yeah. So before I was doing this, I was working in the sustainability space, doing brand storytelling, narrative stuff for organizations that are trying to make the planet function better through the stuff they sell. So sustainable products, organic, natural. And politics have always been interesting to me, mostly because when you look at the power of messaging and advertising on something like Coke versus Pepsi, just for instance, let's just take Coke and Pepsi. They have taught us to believe that choosing one flavorful sugar water over another has something to do with who we are as a people. Hmm. Right? Like you, oh, pff, you drink Pepsi? Ugh. And yet when it comes to politics or governance or democracy, the most important decisions we make in our lives for our country, we're just mudslinging and using base language and just, it's like, it's got nothing to do with who you are. It only has to do with winning and my team. And my, like, I always thought that there was an opportunity to capture people and bring them into the conversation in the same way that massive corporations use advertising to do so for their brands that actually mean nothing to us in the long run. I mean, it means everything, but it also means nothing. So that was interesting. And then look, bottom line, I fundamentally believe that there's something interesting about all people. And I've traveled all over this country a lot. And I've been surprised by folks I meet who look one way, but sound another, or they seem to believe something really different than me. But then I start talking to them and I'm like, oh, actually, we're really on the same page here. We just say it differently. Or, you know, or they live up. So I live in a small town. It's kind of rural. But, you know, some people live on 10,000 acre tracts of land and their experience of being in America is different than mine. And so the whole idea of being able to not pretend that there's false equivalencies between the parties, but just to acknowledge that ultimately most of us want our kids to be healthy. We want our kids to get a good education. We want to have neighbors that we like. We want to have good friends and conversations with people. Like, that matters so much to most Americans and most people all over the world. And the opportunity to work on an issue like this, where everybody agrees that money in politics is a problem. Everybody agrees that gerrymandering is cheating and it shouldn't happen. Everybody pretty much agrees that elections are sacred and we should protect them, right? Like, we can get into these conversations without having disagreement. And I think that opens the door to something else. And whatever that something else is for everybody to decide in their own interactions. But that's what brought me into this work.
Represent.us. People, get in there, get involved, follow them, volunteer for the People Act. We got to pass this. So that's the message you're going to take from this. You're going to call your senator and leave a message. I call a lot of times and it says it's full, the voice message. But
no, it's okay. That's good. You get your message in there.
Get your message in there. Yeah. Let's go to the speed round over here. We're going to call this Back to School with Joshua Graham Lynn.
Back to school.
I'm going to ask you some quick questions, quick answers, and we'll go from there. So first question, were you popular in high school?
No.
Okay, there you go. I bet you this all started when you ran for student council and didn't win.
I did like, not. I never did student council. No.
All right, good for you. No. Don't worry about it.
I was on debate club, though. So.
Okay, there you go. What did you want to be when you were in high school?
When I was in high school, I either wanted to be an actor or in advertising. I was really into theater back then. Yeah.
Okay. You got a good look for it, buddy. You should get into the acting.
So sweet.
What would you tell your high school self if you could tell yourself one thing?
I would tell my high school self that have confidence in yourself and what you believe in and what you want to do and worry less about what everybody else thinks. Because when you come back to your high school reunion in 20 years, you're going to see that what really matters is being a good person, asking some nice questions of the people around you, trying to put a good foot forward. Like, that's the actual things that matter in life. So that's what I would tell my high school self.
That's good advice. What other profession would you do if you could?
I think I might need to own a taco truck.
Yes.
I really love to cook.
Josh's Tacos.
That's not sound right.
That's the name? Sounds like cultural appropriation.
Yeah, that's not good, Maz.
Oh, how about Josho Taco?
Maz, you're digging a hole.
last question. Do you recommend people get into your profession and why? And by your profession, I mean right now, basically philanthropic work for voting or for any thing that they believe in.
So yes, I mean, absolutely. Like, people should work on things that they truly believe in that make them feel good about the work they do. If you can, if that's an opportunity, go for it. And the other way I would take your question is, like, should people run for office? Not that I'm running for office, but I think people should. I think there's this real barrier to entry, right? And it leads to a lack of diversity, a lack of diversity of ideas. And so I'd love to see more people running for office. And you know, we probably see the system working better if more of us got involved in it and took accountability for it.
I agree with you 100%. We've had a few Iranian Americans on our program. We had Anna Eskamami, who is in Florida. She's in the legislature in Florida. We had another one named Yasmin Ansari, who is in the city council in Phoenix. And we had another lady. I don't know if Seppi Shine was on there. Seppi Shine is the first LGBTQ Iranian American in West Hollywood City Council. But what you just said, I love seeing how active they are. And they're on the board, man. We had Nitya, I'm forgetting her last name right now. Anyway, we've had a few on the show, and I get excited. By the way, they've all been female.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, yeah, I mean, good. Men have been in charge for quite a long time, and seems like things are a little broken. So maybe, maybe ladies would have a different idea about how to handle things, or non-men.
We had Congressman Tim Ryan, right, from in Ohio, I believe. He was with us, too. So we've had some. Good. All right. Listen, Tehran, what'd you learn on this episode?
I learned that Josh wants everyone to be poor.
Very good. Yeah, you definitely took a good lesson from that. I learned that if you really want to make a difference, start a corporation, have billions of dollars, and people will listen to you.
So pretty much that simple. Yeah, just have a lot of money.
That's what I like. See, Josh wants us to go do philanthropic work, and Maz with his Persian brain, is like, no, we can become billionaires. And that's how you implement change, by buying power the way the system was intended to be, which is why we continuously have the same problems over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Well, Tehran, you see, here's the thing. Jeff Bezos can't be the only bald guy with influence. I figured maybe I'd make a few billion, have my influence, and,
diversity. I get it.
Get tax-free businesses all over the country and not pay people minimum wage. Is he paying
America?
I don't know. America.
Classic.
With all that said, I want to thank you, Josh, for taking time on Labor Day to be with us. I love your passion. I love what you're doing. People that are watching or listening to this, For the People Act, you're going to call your senator, you're going to call your congress member, let them know you want that to pass. You're going to go to represent.us to learn more about Represent Us and also donate. Are you guys also on social media, Josh, and what is the handle?
So the handles are all at Represent Us. I think we've got them all straight everywhere. And we've got some great stuff on social media. We've got a handful of very interesting influencers that have been making really cool stuff for us because, as I said before, most people agree with this work. And I think you'll find some entertaining material if you go check out what we've got on social media.
Absolutely. One of your best top spokespeople is Jennifer Lawrence, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
I mean, people. And Maz Jobrani.
And Maz Jobrani. What is Jennifer Lawrence's, if J-Lo is J-Lo, is Jennifer Lawrence J-Law? Have we figured this out?
I do believe that's what people say.
Okay, just making sure. That's really why we had you on the show.
It's taking you an hour to get there. But
I would have learned that. Had you said something useful like that, I would have learned that.
Listen, Josh Gremlin, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school, yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're having fun, and we hope you're learning something. So make sure to let your friends know, share it on iTunes, share the clips from YouTube. Just get it out there. However you're listening, let your friends know to tune in to Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school.